The Dave Brubeck Quartet with, even everybody knows this song, this tune, Take Five. It was an instant hit when it originally was released in 1959, and it has remained so all these years. That's the beauty of doing great work. It lasts. Dave Brubeck is on piano. Joe Morello is on drums. Eugene Wright is also on drums and alto sax. Dave Brubeck is on alto sax. Eugene Wright is on drums. Joe Morello is also on drums. And this has been a classic, and it's from the album Time Out, which was released in 1959. I like these kinds of old music because it tells you when something is done beautifully the first time, it lasts. And this is such a situation with the Dave Brubeck Quartet's Take Five. Well, glad that you're back. We've reassembled after the big eruption of the election, and we'll talk about that today. The last time we talked, we were talking about what was going on in the nation's largest city. How was the nation's largest city, meaning New York City, dealing with this new election? What were people feeling? What were they concerned about? And especially this new way of voting, how did they adjust, and so forth? But of course, we have much more news to share, and more, dare I say, misgivings and concerns since then. And we can talk about that today. What, in your view, since you have survived the latest election, what emerges for you as a major point of concern about elections generally, where you are, wherever you are? What emerges for you about this question of elections and what they're supposed to mean in the United States? Do you feel that they should continue, they're worth it? Do you feel that it does promote democracy? What are you thinking about what we think of as elections and what they're supposed to do and accomplish for us as a country? 888-874-4888. It's a bit philosophical, I grant you. I mean, there's no one way to answer the question. But as we grow older and we still are dealing with the concept of democracy, and this is supposed to be the cradle of democracy, when we have elections, what comes to your mind? Or what have you over the years learned? What have you learned that allows you to see elections in a very different way, very different perspective? And do you think you're reading it right? Is there something else that you think is missing from elections? Are elections as constructed in the United States, have they been accomplishing the task? If so, what is the task as you define it? 888-874-4888. We go to the polls. We know it's election day. We trudge out to the polls. We registered to vote. And so we vote. Do we know what we're voting about or for? Do we have any idea what votes are supposed to reflect about our nation as a whole? Do elections work in that sense? Or is there something missing? If so, what is it? What do you think it is? You just voted, maybe. How do you feel about having exercised that right? Do you feel that you were part of the democratic process? And if so, why? Why do you feel whatever it is you feel? Gerald from Florida, you're on the air.
I love your show, and especially the music at the beginning. Let me run down the Take Five cast. Joe Morello, drums. Eugene Wright, bass. Paul Desmond, who wrote the song, alto sax, and Brubeck on piano.
Yes, I said that.
No, you misspoke then, because okay, I just want to make sure your listeners know that you may have thought that, but you misspoke. And it's right up there with Miles Davis, So What, and Like That. Great song.
It's a wonderful
Thank
piece
you.
Of music, isn't it? Hello, Gerald, are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
It's a wonderful piece of music, I was saying.
I listen to it at least twice a week.
Oh,
very
great.
Soothing. Coltrane, Parker, that kind of music, Louis Prima. Louis Prima was, I'm not going off on a tangent here, but yes, I am. Louis Prima was the entertainer's entertainer. That's where everybody went after they finished their act in Las Vegas. They went over to see Louis Prima. And he's the one that wrote Sing, Sing, Sing. And, of course, Benny Goodman made it really famous in the 1938 concert in Carnegie Hall.
And I'm just a gigolo.
I'm sorry?
And I'm just
Yeah, yeah, that's Louis Prima. Love your show. You heard enough from me. I'll listen.
Okay. Thank you for calling in and contributing.
Thank
Benji
you.
From
Bye.
New York, what is the answer to the series of questions? What are the answers, you think? Pick one and tell us what you're thinking is the answer.
What, Benji from New York, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, yes, yes. I just wanted to comment, because the day before you asked about my preferences in the New York City election, Eric Adams was my first, and the one that was not was the one I for sure wasn't for one of my five, but was with his name, the one that you seem to like, Yang. Yang, I didn't
Yang,
vote
because yes,
Yang, I was angered by, because he, during the pandemic, he was upstate. And Eric Adams, even though there's maybe some question mark as to where he lives, but he was in Borough Hall. He was with us in the throes. So that's why Yang was out. And I did put Garcia. She was the. I thought she would see somebody who could maybe, she seemed to prove herself as a leader who could solve problems. So she definitely was, I think, probably was second, and Stringer was third, and Wiley was fourth, and I don't remember. And I think McGuire was five, but I made sure not to have Yang. And it appears that the verdict was clear yesterday that he's not fit to be New York City mayor. So I hope that Adams has what it takes if he's going to be the next mayor. You know, crime is a big issue.
Well, it's still got a ways to go, because that was just the preliminary reading, but all the votes have not yet been tallied.
Yeah.
And it may turn out to be somewhat different when they are. So
yeah, yeah,
we have
true.
To just keep posted on what it is. But What in this election was most important for you? What was most significant?
I think it was a crime. The sort of like things were out of control. I don't see any police. I don't see police. They used to hang out in cars. I don't know where they are. I just don't know where they are. I really don't know. I once talked about that the police presence. even, you know, I mentioned they're only reacting. That's not good. You want police to be proactive. And I just that out there. So I think.
But you know, it's a kind of a between a rock and a hard place. If the police hang back a little bit, people say, just like you said, you want police to be proactive. What does that mean? Your version of proactive would be somebody's definition of too much of a police presence, and it becomes oppressive. So how do you find a happy medium?
Community policing, getting to know the people, walking the streets. Not the a presence of harassment. Just to get to know people. Just to walk around. Just get a cup of coffee. I don't even see them do that anymore. I don't see that either.
It's very rare that you see a police officer just getting a cup of coffee in a diner somewhere.
Yeah, they're not out there anymore. Something had happened. Yeah, I protested. I protested that behavior of the. It was not anti-police. It was anti-police who does the wrong thing. You know, of course, protesting George Floyd. I spent the day doing that. But we gotta have that. We need to have police. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask for you. For you particularly?
Mm-hmm.
What did voting do for you? What do you come away with?
I exercised my choice. I felt good. I also early voting was terrific. I really enjoyed it. I went in. I was out in less than 10 minutes. I must say the early voting is one. I'm a big fan of that. I got a chance to make a choice. I was giving ranked choice voting, and yeah, I felt it was meaningful, and I wanted to see if maybe like for controller looks like my idea was did not. I thought Corey Johnson deserved to get at least to be the first choice, but doesn't look like I don't think he's going to get in because he didn't do too well. So it made me feel like I'm part of the process and I have a say. Yeah, and it gives me hope. And I know you asked about what elections mean to me, and it's the best system we have. I don't believe there's a better system. If there's a better system, I'd like to hear it. So it felt empowering, and it gives me hope. Every election gives me hope, and hoping that that the city I love, we come back stronger and better.
That's a very optimistic view, and thank you for that. Thanks for sharing.
Okay. You have a good day.
888-874-4888. The election is over. The results are not yet in fully. We have to wait and see how things are counted, because this is the first time in New York City, which is the nation's largest city. A lot of things are being tested to see how people react to them, whether they reject them or embrace them, or they have good feelings or bad feelings about them. But in any event, voting for all intents and purposes is over. We have to wait for another year before we do that again. But I'm interested in how the process resonates with you. Is it purposeful? Is it useful to have an election? Do you feel that you are contributing or exercising your democratic rights when you vote? Or has it become something you just do? When you go in to vote, what are you taking with you? What is your consciousness like? What are you hoping to accomplish or lend yourself to when you vote? Is it worth it? Or have you over the years taken a look at that very question to find out whether you feel as an individual that you're contributing to this whole part of American life, that the people are actually choosing government, and a government that they want, the kind of government that they like? Or do you believe that there is some hoodwinking going on? We are being sold a bill of goods, and it helps to calm us as voters when we go out to vote. We could at least convince ourselves, well, I'm doing my civic duty. But is it really? What are your thoughts about this whole process of voting? What has voting come to mean to you? And for the years that you have been voting, have you seen a benefit to it? Is it something that should continue or should be changed? And if so, in what ways should it be changed? 888-874-4888. Many different countries have different views about voting. It's not something that they do at a particular time of year. It is, in many ways, a culmination of things that they do all year. It is incorporated into their patterns and practice of civic life. So voting isn't something that is an annual ceremony and we get to figure out who the contestants are and whatnot in a matter of days. In many countries, this is a very serious undertaking, and people don't go to the polls casually. They are prepared. They know what they are voting for, and in many cases, they know what they're voting against. Voting is not just a casual endeavor to them. In the United States, I'm afraid to say that too many of us see it that way, that it's, well, you know, it's voting. It's like parking a car. It's like any other thing that you automatically do. But do we prepare ourselves as knowledgeable citizens? Do we get into issues? Do we examine more closely the issues we are expected to vote on, and to do so with some measure of authority and background information and knowledge? Are we educated when we go to the polls, or do we just kind of squint and press this lever or pull that lever, and we would consider the job done? Has your attitude toward voting and what its purpose is, has it become more focused in your mind? Or is it pretty much the same? Are you resigned to the idea that voting is just one of those things you do and then you go about your business? In other words, are you now, at this time, more engaged as a citizen, voter, than before? What, if that is the case, what accounts for the change? What are you reacting to now as a more mature voter that you dismissed before? And do you think your voting attitude this year was a conscious departure from, you know, the casualness of voting that you had before? You are voting now because you are aware of issues that you want addressed, or you are taking a position through the exercise of your vote, and you want things done a particular way, you want particular outcomes, measurable outcomes. You have different standards of measurement as you grow older, and therefore the vote becomes more and more significant in your life. And so you approach that whole process very differently. I'd be interested in whether you find yourself changing your whole disposition and attitude about voting. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Patrice. How are you?
Okay, Ed, how are you?
You know.
Here it comes.
Enough said. As far as voting pertaining to New York, as far as local voting, local offices, city council, borough president, mayor, comptroller, things of that nature, I've become very active as time has passed. As far as the national scene, I don't really think personally that my vote really, or any vote really, has a major effect outside of the way the electoral college break down, the way gerrymandering has altered the national map as far as the Senate and congressman elections. I don't think that the individual voter really has a profound impact in a national election. But locally, I've seen results. I mean, just simple things like more trash cans on 93rd Avenue, and more general cleanup of Linden Boulevard, Keith Williams Park. Those are efforts that I've participated in, and I've seen results there. I've petitioned council members and borough presidents. It all started when I lived in Brooklyn working with Charles Barron and Inez Barron, Operation Push and Operation Power. And I think that the local, like, well, I've always said, like, W.C. Fields, all politics is local. So that's where I feel that my efforts are best represented personally in the local arena. I can see the results. I can get my hands on the people who I can hold accountable for the results. And you feel like you're making some sort of a difference for the community, locally speaking.
Well, I see your point that you have a greater proximity between the vote, the actual process of voting, and outcomes, that you feel you have some kind of direct influence over, as opposed to the national voting. What do you think has to happen to create the same sense of direct impact between you as a voter and the system that you're voting within at the national level?
Well, I mean, the three fundamental things that I think would need to take place as far as with American democracy as it is. Number one, money's got to come out of politics. There's too much money in politics, too much capital, too many wealthy players, too many corporations influence decisions, even to the point to where some groups are actually writing legislation and just handing it to the congressmen and the senators, and they're just passing it. So that's a main thing with me, the influence of money in politics. Number two, we need to voter education. People need to learn what the democratic process is. Years ago in schools, you used to have civics classes. You used to have, citizenship classes, things of that nature, explaining the process of a bill, how it's made into a law, explaining the three branches of government, so people could get a good understanding of what this democracy is supposed to be and how to approach it productively. And number three, we need more shorter term limits. The House of Representatives was specifically designed, if someone had an issue, they run for a Congress seat, they get the Congress seat, you do your 2 years, push your issue, push whatever issue you had with your constituency, and then you're out. Don't let politics become a career. Don't let politics become your main vocation, especially in the House of Congress and in the House of the Senate. You know, these people, they're getting in, and the politics, instead of the politics being the tool to change and aid society, the politics become become the main focus. They become the presence of being. I don't particularly believe in a professional politician in those aspects. I mean, you need professional administrators in government, obviously, because governmental actions need to take place. Certain regulations, certain regulatory bodies need to apply. But as far as on the electoral front, term limits, definitely shorter terms in office, more rotation, and open up the board to a wider focus on the general population so everyone can feel like they have the opportunity to involve themselves. I think those three areas would definitely warrant some change for me. And I would feel like more participant in the national elections per se.
So you voted yesterday. Do you feel better about voting this time around than you did before?
We'll see the results. Like I said, this election was, a lot of it was up in the air. There were only a few participants in it that really showed themselves in the community, which is one reason, like I said yesterday, why I voted for Eric Adams. His presence in the community was felt from April on. There were other, like Hassan, I believe the man, one of the city council members, Hassan, I can't remember his whole name at this moment, but he was also, Natasha Williams, she was also in the community, boots on the ground, asking questions, holding virtual seminars, and even when the pandemic started to abate, showing their faces in the place. So that made me feel a little better, but like I said, there wasn't a lot of focus. And towards the end, you were hit with a blizzard of mail-in and writing and all of this. And the mailbox was overflowing with campaign jargon for the past month, and that was a little bit of a turnoff. You had to really be your own journalist and ascertain through the information what was garbage and what was pertinent to the political aspirations of these people and what they were going to do and what they had done. I'm like Helen Caldicott. I always look at the record.
Thank you very much for your call today. Very informative. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Gary from Long Island, you're on the air. What did voting mean for you this time around that it didn't mean the last time you voted?
Am I on? This is Utrice?
Yes. Yes.
Hey, Utrice. Longtime listener is Darius, actually, from Long Island.
Hello, Gary.
What? All right. What I feel is going on in the American, across the country, even in New York, that the people are not actually know what civics and how this system works, because they're going to, I ask them to say, these people are coming around putting up banners in your stores or your barbershops and stuff. And I'm like, all right, they're implementing all the stuff they say they're going to do. Has anybody asked them how they're going to do it? How they're going to get these things done and why and who, what city council members are behind them, but nobody seems to ask that question. And it's just like, it's more of the same continuing over and over. And then when it comes down to people say, all right, why didn't you get anything done? Well, you know that it's a city council and this, and then we get the banana and the trail pipe trick. And then it's just more of the same again. And I think that's a serious problem we have.
Are you aware, as you are voting, that you are voting, you're representing the largest city in the country that is voting?
What are you
aware that you are showing others or imparting to others as you vote? What are you doing?
Well, it's kind of hard, Yatrice. It's hard to tally that up, because there's so much going on in the city of New York that people are not seeing, as the previous caller, like I think it was your first caller, was saying that there's no police presence, and he's absolutely right. I feel that there's a David Dinkins trick going on where the police are just saying, we're not going to really do our jobs. We're just going to come in every day and clock in and just drive around and burn the people's gas off and not really do anything, and just after the crime has happened right there. But for previous crimes, there's no real presence of really performing or helping the community. And I feel that nobody is talking about this, and I think the police union is in on purpose not doing their job. And that is a big point that comes back to accountability of the police, because it seems like the police could do whatever they want in the city and around the country, and nobody holds them and says, well, crime is up and in your department, what's going on? What's the situation? And there's nobody being held to the fire about it. It's just, hey, well, you know, it's this, it's that. But New York City has the highest police in the country or around the world as a city, and they get the highest budget, but crime is up, and they go for new budget and more money every year, but everything stays the same. It's like more of the same, nothing changes, but we need more money and we're not doing our jobs, but we got to keep
progressing in the same direction. So what is New York City, as the largest city in the country, what has it been teaching or conveying to other cities about this business of voting and democratic rights and all the things that we talk about so loftily when voting time comes around? What do you think is New York City is conveying to other cities about this process?
It's conveying that, as I said before, more of the same. Because we do this process every couple of years, and nobody really asks these people how they're going to carry out their duties and how they're going to get all the things they talked about in their campaign done. And that is a serious question. How are you going to do this and that you said? How are you going to do in that and what you said? But nobody asks them that question. They just say, oh, this is what you're going to do. This is what you're going to do. But nobody asks them how they're going to do it. Same thing with the president. Nobody asks them who votes they have, how many people in the council that write some law, because the mayor and the president do not write law. They can say they're behind some kind of law, but they don't do the process of writing and creating the law or creating that process. And we're not asking them that task to say, how are you going to do it? Who you have behind you? Which council members is backing you and who's with it? Because that's how we see democracy working. But democracy is not working because the people are not asking these questions. They're just saying, this guy just represents something I like, not saying what he's going to do. You could like what he's saying, but is he going to do it? And how he's going to do it, that's the real issue, I feel, the people of New York City and the country is not asking about these politicians, and that's globally.
Well, Gary, thanks for your lecture today. We needed to hear it. And you were the one to deliver it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll take this short break and come right back to your comments and answers and opinions right after this. Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Utrice Lead. And we're talking about something I have never heard discussed before among citizens and among voters. What is your job? Is it also, you just show up and vote and then go back home and wait for the results? What we're hearing today, if you've been listening closely enough, is that there is a recognition that voters should have an added responsibility and should demonstrate the use of the vote. So that even if you are voting in New York and somebody is voting in Pennsylvania, there's a consciousness that is the same as to what is the purpose of you voting. And we need to inculcate in voters a sense that there is a purpose in voting. It's not just about what your individual preference is for this office or that, but it is also about answering larger questions, addressing larger questions that you have in common all across the nation. That's what we're getting. I don't know if you realize that, but that's what we're talking about here. And I'm very comforted to know that for so many who've called in today, that is part of their consciousness as well. They have a job to do to alert voters all across the country about developing a different attitude about voting. And that may go a long way to change things. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Greetings, Shutrice, and greetings to your audience.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. You're welcome. In terms of my attitude about voting, it has changed and evolved over the years a little bit. Back in the day, I ran for a city clerk in my hometown, well, my place of residence. And at that time, you know, it was very important to me that election administration be handled properly and improved, you know, in the city. And that campaigning process, I don't know, I got thoroughly turned off. I didn't win, but, yeah, I came in 4 out of 4, but, hey, in terms of voting, here's what I come to appreciate now. Joseph Stalin is supposed to have said, this following quote is attributed to him, that those who cast votes decide nothing, those who count the votes decide everything, end of quote. That's attributed to Joseph Stalin. And there may be some examples of that in the election 2020. And in fact, I understand there's still some vote counting going on underway in Arizona as we speak. And then the other thing that I think is on point is what Lewis Clayton Jones said, how, quote, politicians are not leaders, they are followers. They follow the dictates of those who finance them and their campaigns. The black underclass is certainly not a major contributor, end of quote. That was from his book, Enough is Enough, back in 1981. I think that he told the truth. And based on what I've witnessed on my involvement, you know, on my limited involvement on the political scene in Michigan, I think he told the truth. And also, I'm wondering, how is it possible for, say, for example, the House of Representatives, 435 seats, and each district is supposed to represent approximately 712,000 people. How could one person, one seat, one office? Well, I don't know how it's done. But those 712,000 people, everybody ain't talking. Everybody's not in touch with that so-called rep to let him or her know what they want done or not done. It seems like it's always a or often a the same people taking action and making things happen, kind of like forgive me if I'm not being clear enough. Like, for example, in Michigan, in the House, there's 110 members. And each member represents anywhere from 77,000 to 91,000 residents. And I doubt if they've even heard from any of, you know, they probably haven't heard from half of those folks, these so-called representatives. So who are they representing? They're representing, I think, what Lewis Clayton Jones said. You know, they follow the dictates of those who finance them and their campaigns. And that in turn results in the kind of laws the rest of us have to live under.
All right, so I'm not disagreeing with you there. I'm trying to shift the focus just a little bit.
Okay.
The focus going to the voter. it is one thing that the representatives, and you can make a very good case, and the representatives, just as one individual having to serve a district of tens and thousands of people, it's not possible. It really isn't. So what then falls to the voters themselves to do something about it?
Okay. I'll only speak for myself. That's the only thing I'm halfway sure about. I kind of like the tenets of the idea of having a Black people self-respect political party. It don't have to be necessarily in the physical form, but in my head, knowing what is important, what is in my interest, and what is not in my interest. And I guess going from there. But then again, I guess that's what a lot of people do, I guess. Not everybody, but...
Is that practical? If you're living in a district that, yes, has a large population of African Americans, but not exclusively, is it fair to usurp the rights of others who are not African American and say, well, we're establishing the Black Rights Party?
Nobody's rights should be usurped.
Saying,
no,
we're locking you out. We don't need you.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. Being pro self, being pro Black self-respect doesn't necessarily equate into being anti anybody else, as you know.
No, I don't know that.
Oh, well, oh,
certainly
forgive me.
Not in the way things are practiced. This is life. In life, when you take good care to give indication as to what your main concern is, mm-hmm. by virtue of doing that, you have indicated who need not apply.
Okay.
Well, I'm asking, if the idea of voting is a democratic process, and you're talking about promoting a Black party, a specifically Black party, aren't you contradicting yourself?
I don't think I really understand what you're asking me. I'm sorry. I apologize for being a little dense.
I'm saying if the whole idea of voting is to promote a democratic process, meaning everybody has access to it, the benefits of it and so forth, everybody has access, everybody mm-hmm. has a say, everybody has a vote, everybody can contribute, everybody can yield benefits.
Okay, you're talking hypothetical now, right?
No.
Because I don't think
that's... This is how it would express itself. And the very thing you want to promote, you will be promoting the exact opposite.
No.
Because you're taking care to indicate this is for this particular group only.
Yes, ma'am. Now, I'm not saying that that's necessary. Okay, maybe so, but here's the deal. That's what's happening now, I would think, based on some of the stuff I see. There's a lot of organizations out there that are strictly focused on their own interests, and that's what they push. And oftentimes, that's what they get.
Oh, and yes, thinking, and that's why I'm reacting, because it's on the record that people become very purposeful and very self-directed when they have a plan. If the plan mm-hmm. is to usurp other people's rights and privileges, they'll pursue that plan.
Okay, I'm not talking about usurping anybody's rights or privileges. No, that's not what I'm talking about.
It is implied. It is so clear.
How?
I'm trying to say, if you are a voter,
as we are,
we are voters, mm-hmm. and we align ourselves with the philosophy that we are participating in a process that promotes everyone, and mm-hmm. that safeguards what we call the democratic process. Explain mm-hmm. how what you've just delineated achieves that.
What did you hear me delineate? I just said that I like the idea of a black people's self-respect political party. And
yes.
That the tenets of that party, well, we didn't go into what I think the tenets of that party should be, but at present, I don't think we have what you have described as a democratic process. I don't know that that's ever.
But it probably existed among white landowners. We're discussing your hypothetical response to what you consider to be a not democratic enough process by being very specific. And you are claiming, you're making the argument, this is a far more democratic process.
Maybe that does boil down to that. If there was a black people self-respect political party, that could add to a democratic process if it existed.
And it would also create a schism, because if you're not black, your party has no room for anybody who is not black.
No. Not necessarily. It would depend on the tenets of the party.
But, no, you're saying
again,
self-respect.
A black people,
self-respect. Self-respect. It means that you have to be black to be part of this movement for self-respect. Does it not naturally mean that?
Forgive me. Run that by me again, please. What? And I don't mean to take up a whole lot of time.
No. We very often think in compartments, and it is not applicable in the broad sense that we want it to apply, but it is necessarily very strictly defined. This is the politics we have been experiencing for all these generations. Nobody had to say, if you're black, you can't vote in this election, or you can't vote for this party. Nobody had to say that. They just had to create the aura of what the party is about, and everybody would understand what the party not only is, but more importantly, what it is not. It is not democratic. It is not meant for all people.
Yeah, well, neither is the political system in this country. It's not meant for all people. But
I'm talking about that because you're making false equivalencies here. Neither is this party doing the right thing. So I should be allowed to do the wrong thing just the way.
No. I'm not for the violation that. It wouldn't be violating anybody's rights or mistreating anybody. It's not about mistreatment.
But when you say having a party that has as part of its title...
Yeah, the Black People Self-Respect Political
respect.
Party.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do you expect people... How do you expect people to read that in any other way?
what way are you suggesting people would read it?
It means black self-respect. You can't have a party calling itself the Black Self-Respect Party and still claim you're Democratic. You're not being Democratic.
Well, I didn't, it depends on how you define Democratic, but no, I didn't say anything about being Democratic. No, I was talking
Democratic
about...
Democratic with a small d, meaning everybody is welcome. Everybody can contribute. Everybody, theoretically, can find a home in this party.
Well, that's something I have to think about, because if everybody is in line with the tenets of the party, then I don't see why not.
Yeah, but you again reinforcing exactly what I said. You want a specifically black party for black people. I'm not making the case that you're wrong. I'm making the case that it's a misrepresentation of what it is you are explaining. It's a misrepresentation. It is, in fact, an all-black party for all black people. And yet you are extolling the virtues of democracy. How do you manage to traverse these two things?
I'm kind of confused right now. I'm going to have to back up and think about what it is you're saying. Because
black self-respect. Self, meaning your black self.
Black self-respect. 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 Black self-respect. Yes.
Who's self-respect? Black people self-respect.
Black people respecting themselves. Black people respecting themselves. Black self-respect.
Yes, but it also directly implies that it is not for all people. It is not for Latino, it's not for Asians. It's not for Portuguese people. Black people only. That's what you are promoting.
Okay, if you say so, but I think people can make pretty good arguments that the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the Green Party,
the Democratic Party, they are obligated by law, even now, even if they don't observe the law, they are obligated by law not to engage in discrimination, racial discrimination. You're saying the exact opposite. I just want us to be clear that that's what you say.
Okay. Well, okay. What you're saying that I'm saying that by having a black people self-respect political party, that is strictly for black people. Is that what you're saying? I'm saying.
And that's what nobody you're else saying.
Can join
no,
the party.
No, I'm not saying that that's what you're saying. I'm saying that is what you're saying. I just wanted clarity on that.
Well,
and I wanted to know whether
I'm saying that's what you're saying. I'm saying that the party would have to exist inside people's minds. It doesn't necessarily have to be on paper, this black people.
Now you're going really into la-la land. No party exists in anybody's mind. You either are on paper. Marcus Garvey was very clear in delineating his political plan. He didn't mince words. This is what I'm about. This is what the UNIA is about. They didn't mince words. I'm just saying, as they say, speak it plain. But we've run out of time. And this is a constant contradiction that you're dealing with. And you haven't yet come to terms with it. And it's important that you do make it a priority to sort out exactly what your feelings are and what your intended purpose is, because they're at odds with each other. That brings us to the end of our program today. Thank you all for contributing. And I'm glad that we were able to see the links that we have as voters and should have as voters, understanding how politics works and how universally applicable many of its tenets are. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.